Hello, it is January 12th, 2015. You are looking live at Dallas, Texas. This is episode 458 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. I am in Dallas to preview Monday night's college football playoff championship game. So, that game has already happened, because we're cutting it a little close this week. If that game has already happened, the only real reason for you to listen to this show now is to make fun of all the terrible predictions we made and all the terrible assumptions that we ran with and things that we were completely wrong about. So if that game's already happened, you might as well just wait for the trivia podcast that'll be out Wednesday. This is previewing the game from here in Dallas where I am. I'm at the Renaissance Dallas Hotel. I mulled around the lobby. I do poorly at these things because everyone's wearing badges and I hate wearing badges and lanyards, and I always just end up hiding in my room. And that's where I am now. I'm in my hotel room about to talk about the college football championship game with Ty Hildenbrand. He is the co-host of the great, much, much more professional than this podcast, the Solid Verbal. He is sans Sam Rubenstein, his co-host today. I like him that way. I've invited him up to my room to do this podcast, so I need to switch into a robe real fast, and then I'll have him on. But anyway, so the point is, if the game's over, there's probably not a lot of reason for you to listen to this. But if you are in that revved-up notion of, yaha, this is going to be so fun because there is a game tonight and I can't wait to listen to everything I can about it, this is your lucky day, because here is Ty Hildenbrand. First off, Ty, thank you for coming up to my hotel room. I hope you are
yes,
not...
Yes, this is an awkward first meeting.
Yeah, in retrospect, you know, I just happened to be wearing this robe.
Yeah,
it's a total accident.
No, I mean, non-visual medium here, but...
Exactly. It's rare I even do these podcasts in person, and you know, you don't either. I was actually... It's funny, I saw you down on Radio Row today. I think it was Feldman there?
Bruce Feldman, Stuart Mandel were down there.
Yeah, well, I didn't see, so I only saw Feldman. And, so I felt so guilty because you guys are doing the show, and I'm such a big fan of the show. I didn't want to, like, interrupt you, and so you saw me. I was like, you know, and I like ran out of there.
Well, and you know,
you guys were doing the show.
It's a weird thing for us too, because as you said, every other time throughout the course of the year that Dan and I do the Solid Verbal, we don't see each other. We don't even use the video component of Skype when we're connecting. So it's very rare that I actually get to do an in-person show with him to talk college football. And this is one of those rare occasions. Now that we're here at the national championship, we try to go every year. But certainly,
is it weird? Does it take you a while to get like going back on?
It kind of does.
Yeah,
it kind of does. Once we get rolling, it's easier.
Right.
It's way easier because you know you can motion to people and you could. You don't have to worry about typing something quickly.
But the first time, it's like weird. Like you're here. Like hello.
For me, maybe he would answer differently. For me, it takes like a good 20 minutes to get back in the swing of doing something in person.
So when did you get here? When did you arrive?
I arrived on Thursday evening after a flight that was delayed 3 hours thanks to weather in Chicago, even though I was leaving from Newark.
Of course.
Chicago screws everything up this time of year. So I've been in town since Thursday night, did our first show bleary-eyed on Thursday evening with Dan and some of the other guys from SB Nation.
I'm at their fancy house. They've got like a fancy house.
It's like the Nissan Heisman house with less athleticism.
Right.
And
but just as many little Tinker Toys of Johnny Manziel.
They've got an Xbox with one controller.
Right. That sounds...
And we've been going strong ever since. We've been trying to push a show or two out a day.
Okay, well, you guys are kicking ass. And obviously, I'm assuming if you're listening to this at all, you listen to Solid Verbal already. So before we get into the game, I want to do one last thing that I want to apologize to you about in person.
Apologize?
Yes, because to this day... the secret verbal is one of my favorite little gimmicks of the Solid Verbal. I was in fact at one point a secret verbal target.
You were with the Orca Me.
Which it was funny because the show literally went up 2 days before I moved from New York City to Athens.
Okay.
So I wasn't like, I didn't have web access for a week.
See, this is what we're looking to target people in transition.
Yeah, you got me. Because
to really throw off the equilibrium.
It was literally like I think I was just packing up my computer and someone said something about Orca Meat. And I was like, I don't know what that means. Now, don't worry about it. And then I like logged on like 48 hours later and it was nothing but Orca Meat. And so for me, I feel bad because I never heard the next show because usually you guys do updates on whether anyone knows, but this could have gone into perpetuity.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Has anyone ever just ignored entirely?
Yeah, I mean, it has. Yeah. We've had varying degrees of success. So the most successful one, by the way, for people who don't know what a secret verbal is, what we do is we give out like a code word or like a code theme, and we tell people, all right, this person on Twitter has no idea it's coming, but you know, let's tweet at Will Leach that. You know, you've got a problem with his fascination with eating orca meat. Something totally off the reservation. Right. So we've had varying degrees of success with this. We did one at Tony Reale. Mm-hmm. Probably the most successful. He actually mentioned it on his show. And then he came on our show and we got Pablo Torre, who's on his show. Yeah, right. We tried Herb Street. We've tried Fowler. Yeah. Fowler sort of acknowledged it. Yeah. I don't know if he knew exactly where it was coming from. Herb Street sort of ignored it, although he did respond to a few people. We've had people who have just no idea what's going on, and so they've chosen to outright ignore it. Others have been a little bit more active, and it's become a thing.
I've always enjoyed it, and that's why I felt like, to this day, I'm like, of all the times, I would have loved the confusion, but it was all retroactive confusion.
It's it just so happens that we caught you at that awkward moment in life.
Right, right.
And maybe we'll try to find it. Find another one to get you on. But this time you'll know what's coming.
I just feel guilty. We should probably talk about the game. Specifically, this atmosphere. It's interesting because I've gone to a few Super Bowls, and I generally hate going to. The game is fun, but the experience around the Super Bowls, it's basically like a huge corporate conference, and it's just like it's where it's. I think someone made the joke about Barclays Center that it's a place where brands go to hang out with other brands.
Pretty much.
That is what the Super Bowl feels like. You've been here longer than me. I just got here today, but with their choice of venues and they clearly want this to be like a Super Bowl 1A or 2A or so on. It seems more low key than that. But you've been here longer than me.
Yeah, I mean, and by the way, I don't have the baseline experience of having gone to a
Super
Bowl.
It's horrible, and it's worse than I can even make it sound.
You know, very. I imagine it as very like impersonal and sort of like this brand oriented thing as you described. I think they want to make this college football's Super Bowl. They definitely want to make it college football Super Bowl. And that's why when they put this whole playoff thing together, they're trying to get cities to bid to host this game. They're hosting it in Arlington at Jerry's World, this huge, monolithic stadium. Dan was there earlier this week and said it's like a spaceship. Yeah. You don't see it coming. It's sort of like just this big thing. They want this to be a Super Bowl in due time. But it is more low-key than that. You know, imagine the Super Bowl when it was first starting out.
Right.
It was not the Super Bowl. It is quite...
Though I think this one will be shown live on television.
This won't be on live television, sure. But even the Super Bowl didn't used to be the Super Bowl.
Right.
And certainly as this playoff system matures, we'll see what the numbers are like as far as the television audience goes. We'll see what kind of publicity it gets, what kind of a game it is. But I think it is definitely ripe to grow into something that can be as big of a big as the Super Bowl within a college football context. It's never going to be a worldwide phenomenon that the NFL is with its global marketing machine, but certainly within the context of American sports and college sports fans, it can definitely grow to be bigger if, in fact, this game ends up being a rousing success.
You know, I wrote a piece on Thursday about how it's kind of strange because, you know, while we're talking, the Patriots are playing at the Ravens, so don't tell us who won, because we don't know.
Yeah, spoiler.
It's interesting because basically my piece was about this idea, because I don't like that it's at these big venues. It's like when, I think you've talked about this before, when game day goes to like Berry World or something rather than being on campus. And to me, the piece was the idea that like the NFL games have become this impersonal thing, that being there in person is miserable. It's not fun. You're better off watching it on television, with the possible exception of three of the four places that are hosting games this week. So it looks like the NFL is a sport that's experienced entirely on television. Of course, college football is a big television thing too. But particularly now that I live in a college town and have been... The experience of game day and going to the games, being there in person, is so much better than watching it on television, in the exact opposite way that watching it on television is better than the NFL. It does feel like maybe it's if they expand to 8 and they have campus sites there, but it does feel like not only does it lose something, but it feels weirdly not even in line with what kind of one of the great things about the sport.
What was the main concern all along about starting the playoff, outside of the whole make-believe we're afraid of our student-athletes missing class time, because they went with that for a while. Right. We all knew that.
I'm still afraid about that. I'm worried about all of it.
Right, we're all worried about, you know, Marcus Mariota's academic prowess. But that being said, we heard so much about the logistics for fans. Yeah. How are people going to go to both sites? The answer is most aren't.
Yeah.
you're going to have a few rich alums on both sides that are able to afford it in a private jet and go in the suite, and they'll live it up. But for most people, they can't afford to do both. And so that's another thing I want to see. What happens after this game? What happens when people start writing columns about the crowd, the atmosphere at a game like this? Is it going to be everyday fans? Yeah. Is it going to be corporate brands like you see at the Super Bowl who give tickets out to their to their clients? What kind of a crowd is it going to be? What kind of an atmosphere is it going to be? That is why, in my estimation, college football is the best sport. The best sport because you have that atmosphere. You don't have that kind of atmosphere at almost any pro event, maybe save for like NHL hockey. Right. You know, or an NFL playoff game sometimes.
Or maybe like an NBA Finals Game 7.
I mean,
in Golden State.
So, It's going to be missing that atmosphere component that we all know and love with college football. And again, it remains to be seen how much of a success that will or won't be. But there's definitely something there. And it is a little disappointing to have it at a neutral site and to kind of take the atmosphere component out of it. At the same time, if it does go over and become this huge thing, then I think it probably buoys the sport as a whole.
I think it's interesting too, because it feels like this could benefit a lot from people being a little bit more nimble than they're talking now. Like every time you see an interview of this, they're like, we're sticking with four. Like everyone's like weirdly, like this, we're not even done with this yet. Like we're literally only like two of the games have been played. We have the big thing left to go. And I think because people keep asking so much about eight and keep asking so much about it, it feels like this thing has to be nimble because this is a beta run.
Spoiler, they're going to go beyond four.
Right.
The people who are making that argument, look, I get it. Right. I get it. You don't want to marginalize the regular season. So many other pro sports, college basketball, they've got the 68 team tournament, 168 team tournament now.
They would do 96 if they could.
You know, and those regular seasons, to some degree, are marginalized. You could probably go up to eight without putting too big a dent in the regular season, the quote-unquote every week is a playoff atmosphere that you see in college football. I would like to see six. Some would like to see eight. The truth of the matter is, this is going to make so much money, Will. It's going to make so much money.
It doesn't matter what the atmosphere
is. It doesn't matter. What was logistically impossible before is going to be the kind of thing in like 2 years from now where the execs sit around the room and say, we could go to like 17 with this thing. I mean, really, they're going to make so much money off this, and it doesn't matter what people think. It's not going to matter in the grand scheme of things whether or not you marginalize the regular season a little bit or a lot. Money talks. Eventually, this is going to expand. It's a matter of if not when.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm eager for, but I that's the one thing I would really love to see out of this eventually. I hope they keep the door open for doing games on campus, because that just seems like the idea of the experience is just so different that it feels like imagine what these campuses would be like if Florida State's playing at Georgia in a round of eight game. It would be insane.
Look at the FCS level. All right, they've got a 16-team tournament. I'm sure 90% of the people listening to this podcast couldn't name more than like 15 FCS teams. That's irrelevant. You play a game in New Hampshire in the cold where, I mean, they've got a catchy nickname for the stadium. I mean, I think they call it like the Dungeon or something. I mean, these teams have a decided, for lack of better terms, schematic advantage when they're playing at home. And it definitely adds a component that this sort of negates. We might have that at some point in the future, but you know, certainly if you go to eight, that's when logistics do become more of a thing. If you want a paying audience, then maybe that's something you have to entertain, having it on campus.
Well, it's funny. Even those games, the ones at New Hampshire, it's such a television sport now that even if one of those games on, I don't know any of the teams. It's football. You stop.
Fordham played New Hampshire, and I know this because we paid an inordinate amount of attention to Fordham this year, the one true team of New York City. Right. The coverage of that game was so cool. It was on ESPN3 and nowhere else, but it was horrible weather in New Hampshire. Like, you can imagine what the weather is like in early to mid-December in New Hampshire. It's far worse than anything you see.
And it's all just like cold metal bleachers.
It's cold. Yeah, and they all turn out for it.
Yeah,
the atmosphere is still there, and if you're Fordham, you got to go into a hostile environment, find a way to win. You come out of that game with a win, if you do, which they didn't, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, this is a legit team. Yeah. So.
All right, so talking about this game in particular, I'm curious what you think. obviously there's been a lot made about whether there's there being no SEC team and so on. To me, the more interesting aspect of it is we have two teams that are actively fun and fast in a way that, like, college football for a while, particularly in the SEC, there was this criticism for a while that what was the LSU-Alabama game that was 10-7 or 10-9 or so on, or
9-2-1.
Yeah, exactly. And to me, like, I still know a lot of people that feel that some, like, I think I heard on your podcast actually, someone talking about the idea that it gets a little tiring sometimes. Like, now there's almost too much scoring sometimes. Like, now, like, I am not quite to that point yet, but certainly, do you think it is, to start out in a new direction with this, to me it's kind of great to have these two grinded out kind of big, huge teams running against one another, but two teams that are not only fast and score a lot, but will do weird shit.
A good way to phrase it. Part of the reason why I think there was some unique level of intrigue around an Alabama-LSU title game, not so much the low score, not so much the slugfest mentality, that was a championship game that was highly regionalized.
Yeah.
It was the South. It was like its thing. If you're an SEC fan, this is where the big boys play football well. And if you want to see a real championship game, then watch Alabama-LSU. Well, now it's a different story. The SEC had its chance. It lost. And I think it's good for college football to have two flashy teams. These are exciting teams to watch. There is no chance in hell. And now it'll happen, right? There is no chance. I'll say it knocking on wood.
Right.
There is no chance in hell this game finishes like 17-10. There's just no way. These offenses are way too high-powered. The defenses are good enough, and certainly Oregon's going to try to prevent big plays. They're going to have some degree of success. Ohio State's going to try and disrupt Marcus Mariota's rhythm. They might have some degree of success. But ultimately, on both sides of the ball, you have too many weapons. Too many weapons for this to be a really low-scoring game. And like you said, in the first year of a college football playoff, in the first year of the one true champion now,
right.
To me, I think you want a high-scoring affair. You want something that people can watch, something that might... that an aunt could watch who isn't in the college football and say, hey, I like Oregon's uniforms. I like the scoring. It seems like this is a fun game to watch. That is what Bill Hancock wants with this. He wants people to watch, be drawn in, and get excited about it.
Is there a notion of this being, I know even when Oregon lost to Auburn a few years ago, that Oregon was just about to break through. Like, clearly one of the top programs, but still kind of an insurgent in the last 10 years. Then to finally break through, I kind of like the certain kind of symmetry of them finally breaking through in the actual start of this new era. It's just almost just kind of a shame. I kind of wish Kelly was there. Like, nothing.
Well, he built it.
Exactly. It feels like he should have that rather than having to deal with Mark Sanchez.
It would be... we don't wish that upon anyone. It would be very fitting if Oregon won its first national championship in the first year of a new system. I'm cool with the whole firsts thing. I would love to see Oregon win a championship here. That being said, there's obviously a tradition at Ohio State. For them to win would be fitting in its own right as well. You could kind of spin it either way. I think the better storyline is probably the new team, the Oregon team that's been knocking on the door. They've been there. It's taken them a while to put the pieces together. Their coach has moved on. He's passed it down. Mark Helfrich, who nobody knew about. Nobody knew about at the start of the year.
He's all from Oregon from the beginning, too. Right?
He's born and raised Oregon. And it's probably oversimplifying to say that no one's heard of him. But compared to, like, Urban Meyer, compared to Jimbo Fisher, compared to Nick Saban, who's Mark Helfrich? Who's this guy?
And probably grew up with an Oregon team that was horrible, that nobody cared about. Like,
this is a guy who has very much taken the baton from Chip Kelly. There was a lot of skeptics. My co-host, Dan, no one was more skeptical of Mark Helfrich than Dan. Not only was he skeptical of Mark Helfrich.
He had me down on him.
he was skeptical of Don Pelham, the defensive coordinator, who's done a really good job in his own right. So, there's a lot of reason here to root for Oregon to get that first national championship in, and I think start this system off right with a first-time national champ.
But, of course, there's also a certain kind of amazement with the idea that I feel like if Cardale Jones wins this game, if he wins the Big Ten championship game and then wins the first two games ever of the playoffs, his first three starts ever as a freshman quarterback, like, I feel like he should just, like, quit now.
Like, what do you,
like walk away and, like after that, no. He,
like,
he
gets, what do you, what, yeah. How do you top that?
Right. If he gets hit by a truck in 3 months, how do you, how do you he's top James that? Dean.
You know, like, and by the way, this storyline of Cardale Jones, though very intriguing and very interesting, not only for those of us who follow it, but for people who don't follow and find out, like, oh, this is a third string guy, it is very, very interesting. It is also spun out of control at this point. I watch First Take. We know First Take is a beacon for sports journalism and hot takes.
It's good. It's good.
On ESPN2 or ESPN, whatever station it's on.
It's a low-calorie, fit kale. It's the kale of television.
When I was getting ready to fly down here, and I was waiting to be shuttled to the airport at Newark, on TV in the trailer, I saw Skip Bayless with a straight face ask Todd McShay, where would you put Cardale Jones on your NFL draft board? I mean, I don't even know what to say. I'm making that motion now of my mind being blown.
I feel like maybe Bayless has actually been watching Ohio State football as long as Cardale Jones has been the quarterback. So as far as he knows,
could be. But I mean, I can't imagine another scenario in which that's like, sort of in an alternate universe, a feasible question. Because he would be eligible.
Right.
Right? I mean, I don't know how you grade him. Todd McShay looked at him with a blank stare. Like, is this a real question? Are we still recording?
I was prepared. I knew I was on this show, so I was prepared for something like this to happen.
But I mean, that's, and you know, Skip Bayless is always deal in hyperbole, but I think that does give you an example of how this thing has taken on a life of its own with Cardale Jones. He's very hefty,
right?
He's very exciting to watch. He's got the big arm. We'll see what happens when Oregon forces him to check down, all right? Instead of throwing 50-yard bombs to Devin Smith, what happens when you have to check down to, like, an 8-yard route to,
Because he was actually terrible for, like, half of that Alabama game.
He was terrible for the first quarter and the fourth quarter. He did really well in between. What happens when Oregon plays two safeties really high and really deep, and all of a sudden you've got to throw a 6-yard out pattern to Ezekiel Elliott?
Right.
What happens then? That remains to be seen before we christen this guy as like the next Byron Leftwich. Let's pump the brakes a little bit.
Right, the idea that everybody. But I do love the notion that, of course, there's all this idea of like who's gonna transfer, whether Braxton Miller's gonna transfer and so on. But like it is strange that already that Braxton Miller, the guy coming in before the injury, we're like, oh, he's gonna win the Heisman Trophy and lead them to the national championship game. Now he's like this totally forgotten.
So question for you.
Yes, sir.
We just got done talking about this about 30 minutes ago on our show. If you're Braxton Miller, what is your goal for next season? What is it that you want to do? Because if you're Braxton Miller, you have to realize, I hope he realizes, he's very much a system quarterback. He doesn't have pro pedigree. Right. He's not going to go and start for Chip Kelly. All right, he's just not that kind of guy. So it would seem if you're looking to play football for the rest of your career, the wiser move might be to try and switch positions. Ohio State obviously has an embarrassment of riches at quarterback. They don't need Braxton Miller to play quarterback. They've proven that they can do it with JT Barrett or with Cardale Jones. So do you switch positions, or do you decide? Do you have like the I'm Keith Hernandez moment and say, "Dude, I'm Braxton Miller. This was my job. You took it from me. I still want to play quarterback. I'm going to go back to Ohio State or somewhere else because I believe I can lead a team to that." Like, what is the end game for you with one season of eligibility remaining?
I feel like it's asking a lot. Listen, I'm older and more mature and more wise in the world, theoretically, than Braxton Miller. But I would not have I don't have the maturity not to be like, no, God damn it, I'm Braxton Miller. Like, I the idea that coming into this year, he's a Heisman, potential Heisman guy and take them to the national championship. The idea that an injury caused me to not only lose my job, but lose my position, even if it's good for him in the long term,
or,
I don't know.
Or
if I can
lose
do
your
it.
Team.
Yeah, right.
That's the other thing, right? Because people are like, oh, he's going to transfer to Florida State.
I've heard
Oregon.
There are naked people asking him to do so on Twitter, I've heard.
You know, but, so like, that to me is the component that I think I have the hardest part digesting. If you want to switch positions, cool, because you want to get to the NFL. If you want to play quarterback, because you've always been a quarterback, cool. But now he has to leave his team?
Yeah. I mean, but
because there are two young guys.
But doesn't he have to? Like, doesn't he have to? Like, if why would I pick for my last year that path of most resistance? The idea, particularly if they win on Monday, now you've got a guy you've got two guys ahead of you, one of which has played three games, all three of which have won the national championship.
All three of which,
like, why you've got 1 year left? 1 year left. Why even put yourself through?
All three of which, by the way, might be as good.
Right.
Might be as good. I put you in the scenario of playing a video game.
Mm-hmm.
Play Madden. Okay. Play NCAA. Let's say play one of the last NCAA versions, the NCAA 2014.
Right.
You are running your team, and you have the option to start a true sophomore quarterback who's an 86 mm-hmm. or a fifth-year quarterback who's an 87. I probably start the 86. He's got more upside. You get him some stats, he gets better. So I now this isn't a video game. This is real life. But but it's a dilemma if you're Urban Meyer.
Well, I feel like no matter what, particularly if they win that game. Like if they win that game, it's like the idea that it would go back to Ohio State next year and then sit the bench like he was probably planning to do all along. Yep. Next year is kind of a crazy thing.
Matt Hinton from mm-hmm. Grantland wrote a great article. He's been killing it all week talking about all things Ohio State, Oregon. And he wrote what I thought was a masterful article on Cardale Jones and sort of the what-if scenario. Everybody acknowledges that he's only had two starts. He's only had two starts. He's looked good enough in those two starts. And what he said in the article is he could be really good. He could be great. He could be the best quarterback of a generation. We have no idea at this point. And unless he goes out there and totally tanks, we still won't have an idea after this.
And game. even if he tanks, it's his third start. I mean, but yeah, but that does, it is strange because when I think about who's going to win this game, as impressive as Ohio State was, to me, you know, I mean, maybe this is just because I just watched Ryan Lindley play.
Right.
I know, like when there's that dramatic of a quarterback difference, I know the college game is different, but like to me, I find it so hard to pick a team with Cardale Jones, regardless of what we know or don't know about him, over a team like Maryland.
I couldn't do it against Alabama. Yeah. I couldn't do it. It's like, how in the world is this guy going to beat Nick Saban in Alabama? And he managed to do it. You can't put it all on him because the Ohio State defense played really well. Lane Kiffin's defense played pretty well in only giving the ball to Derrick Henry 13 times,
which is
you know, which will remain in infamy, I'm sure. But
people cut him slack, though. I don't think they'll let it go. It's Kiffin. They'll let it go.
I would love to meet his agent.
Yeah, another thing I enjoyed about your podcast, by the way, was when I think it was Ryan Nanny brought up that, like, Illinois, why not? Kiffin go to Illinois. Who cares?
Someone's gonna bite hard on Lane Kiffin.
It's gonna be
in like the 2016 season.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
we already had Zuck.
It's inevitable, but yeah, you know, you can't put that win all on Cardale Jones against Alabama.
But that's what I mean. Like, I just have a hard time not picking Mariota.
Because
not only is he great, but, like, he's consistent. Like, he doesn't have blow-up games. He doesn't have, like, it's hard to imagine, even if things get crazy for them for a moment, that he's not going to be able to get them settled down.
How many examples in modern sports do we have of a third-string quarterback, a third-string anything?
Right.
Coming in and having this level of success, you'd have to go back. Dan uses the example of the time Jeff Hostetler, when the Giants won the Super Bowl with Jeff Hostetler, 91, 90, whatever that was, early 90s. He was a second string guy. All right, there's plenty of examples of second string guys coming in and doing this, but for him to come in for his first three starts to potentially be in the Big Ten championship, a national semifinal, and then a college football playoff championship game, for him to go 3-0 in that span would be, you know, that would be the talk of the town.
And it's worth knowing that, like, most third-string quarterbacks aren't as huge as he is. And
no! Can't throw an 89, of course not.
90 yards from their feet.
Of course not. Why is he even on the team? Why didn't he transfer already?
Right.
You know, he should transfer to, like, week three.
Right.
But, you know, now Ohio State has, it's like having too deep a bullpen.
Yeah, right.
Really.
Yeah. So, all right, well, okay, last thing before we sign off and make you do some trivia. I'm sure you made. I don't want to scoop any predictions that you have, or if you go to play somewhere else.
This is my first prediction.
Now, this may run after you guys run on solid.
No, I don't care.
Okay,
right. Doesn't matter. Okay. I think a lot of points. The most. Let's put it this way, the one prediction that I read, and I brought it up in like every single podcast we've done down here. I've asked people their thoughts on Andy Staples from SI.com, his prediction of 45-41 Oregon. I have been notoriously horrible at picking like the last 10 bowl games, mm-hmm. not against the spread,
but
just outright. I'm like 1-9.
You're picking against the Big Ten too much.
It's you know, it's been a rough go of it for me. I thought Florida State was going to win. I thought Alabama was going to win. Neither.
Right, that's not what happened.
One. So I feel like there is enough offense here to warrant going with Ohio State plus the 7 points is what it was before. But since the news of the suspension mm-hmm. with Oregon's wide receiver, Darren Carrington, the line's come down to like 5 points, and that feels a little low to me. So I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say Oregon wins this one. Oregon covers the spread. I do think there'll be a lot of points, but let's say Oregon wins by a 45-35 score.
All right, well, I would like that sounds about right to me. I would consider something similar. I'm not even sure that I could see maybe even like 38-28, like maybe a little bit lower, just because you know. But again, it's not like Oregon, if they get a lead, they're going to like sit on it.
They're not going to sit on it. The key for me is the big plays. It's the big plays, and it's like the most obvious thing you could say. I realize the key is big plays. Ohio State has a guy now in Cardale Jones who is going to try and live and die by that big play. And if Oregon can force him to check down, force them as a team to run it a little bit more with Elliott than they would otherwise plan to, that to me is the difference. Big plays. And conversely, on the other side, if Ohio State can prevent Oregon from kind of getting in that mold where all of a sudden they have all the momentum in the world, like they did against Florida State, where they just ripped off a ton of points. If they can prevent them from doing that, then maybe things go in their favor. But ultimately, I do think Oregon's defense is good enough. I think they'll find some way to confuse Cardale Jones, take away that big play, and you know, win by 10.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. Now, again, as I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, this will probably be up Sunday afternoon. But if no one's heard it yet, if the game has already happened, you can probably just skip everything. Like,
I'm going to be wrong. Right. I'm going to be wrong. This is probably the kiss of death for Oregon. Right. But I'll stick with 45-35. I'll run with that on my show, too.
All right. Well, thank you for coming up to my hotel room and doing this with me.
Thank you.
And,
we have to stop meeting like this.
I know. Seriously. I apologize for particularly all the leg crossing I was doing.
Yeah.
anyway, thank you. Now, stick around. We'll do some trivia. But
yes, please. What kind of trivia is this?
Well, you'll find out in the next episode. We'll pause and then we'll go to the next episode.
Okay.
So we're going to say goodbye to you now. So thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you for coming. So thank you thank you to Ty Hildenbrand. You can follow him on Twitter at Ty Hildenbrand, TYHILDENBRANDT. This is
very long, 12 letters.
That's okay. That's I got them all in order. I had in front of me.
Yes.
And actually, I just say those letters randomly every night anyway. It's just weird that you're here. Thank you. This is the Well Aged Experience podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We'll be back in 2 days with trivia with Mr. Ty. Take care. Enjoy the game.